From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, baby formula crisis. The worsening national baby formula shortage is putting parents on edge as they scramble to find ways to feed their children. We'll speak with the Director of Nutrition Policy at the Food Research and Action Center in Washington about why this is happening and what parents can do. We'll also get perspective locally from Nancy McGraw, Director of Public Health for Sullivan County. And as America marks the grim milestone of 1 million lives lost to COVID-19, McGraw updates us on the uptick in cases in our area and the public health advisory she issued yesterday. National outcry. Today, May 14th, major abortion rights protests are planned in every state. We speak to the organizer of the pro-choice protest in Milford, plus a farm and country extra. Rosie Starr takes us on a stroll through the Labyrinth Gardens. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. Ukrainian troops have successfully repelled Russia's assault on Ukraine's second-largest city. NPR's Jason Bobian reports on the Russian pullback from the northeastern city of Kharkiv.
Top Ukrainian military officials, as well as analysts from the U.S.-based Institute for the Study of War, say that Russian forces are retreating from positions on the outskirts of Kharkiv. The Russian assault on Kharkiv began in the first hours of the war on February 24th. The defense of the city by Ukrainian troops marks the second major defeat for Moscow after Russia gave up on its attempts to seize Ukraine's largest city and capital, Kyiv. Artillery fire can still be heard in the distance, but local military officials say it's from Ukrainian troops pushing the Russians even further back. And after being pounded by Russian artillery for weeks on end, the head of the Kharkiv Regional Military Administration says there have been no strikes on the city in the last 24 hours. Jason Bobian, NPR News, Kharkiv.
As abortion rights supporters prepare to rally in cities across the country today, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas is describing his concerns about the impact on the court of the leak of that draft opinion that indicates the court is preparing to overturn Roe v. Wade. At a meeting of conservative scholars in Dallas, Thomas spoke of the level of trust within the court.
It was beyond anyone's understanding, or at least anyone's imagination, that someone would do that. And look where we are, where now that trust or that belief is gone forever.
Chief Justice John Roberts has ordered an investigation into the leak. Thomas has long called for Roe v. Wade to be overturned. An Alabama judge has blocked a new law that makes it a felony to prescribe gender-affirming medicine for minors. Troy Public Radio's Kyle Gassett reports that the Alabama law is the first in the nation to threaten doctors with criminal penalties.
U.S. District Judge Lyles Burke issued the injunction a week after a hearing on the law concluded in Montgomery. Both sides testified to the impact of the law, which was challenged by parents of transgender youth and the Department of Justice, which called it a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey has repeatedly defended the law that she signed last month.
But you know, the good Lord made you a boy at birth, then you're a boy. And the good Lord made you a girl at birth, then you're a girl.
The injunction does leave parts of the law intact, including a ban on gender-affirming surgeries for minors. For NPR News, I'm Kyle Gassett in Montgomery.
The preliminary injunction in Alabama came after the state Supreme Court in Texas decided to allow the state to investigate parents of transgender kids for child abuse. The court, however, put on hold the investigation into the family of a 16-year-old while the family's lawsuit is pending in lower courts. You're listening to NPR News. Authorities in Milwaukee are investigating two shootings in the city's downtown last night that left at least 20 people injured. The shootings happened near an entertainment district where thousands were watching the Milwaukee Bucks play the Boston Celtics in the NBA's Eastern Conference semifinals. None of the injuries are believed to be life-threatening. Police say a 29-year-old man is in custody. The first shooting injured three people. Another 17 were injured in the second shooting. The Eurovision Song Contest Grand Final takes place in Italy today. A group from Ukraine is the favorite. But Vicky Barker in London reports that Britons are feeling a surge of optimism about the annual pop music competition.
Early reports suggest Sam Ryder's power ballad, Spaceman, could just end years of national humiliation for Britain. It's been more than a decade since the UK's even made the top 10 in Eurovision. The last 2 years it finished dead last. But Britain's facing a powerful challenger from Ukraine's entry. Stefania by the Kalush Orchestra blends traditional folk and hip-hop in a son's tribute to his mother. Written before Russia's invasion, the song has come to stand for the Ukrainian people's own love for their mother country. They'll be introduced by a national host broadcasting from a bunker inside Ukraine. For NPR News, I'm Vicky Barker in London.
And I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Skoll Foundation, committed to powering social entrepreneurs and other social innovators who build bold and equitable solutions that transform the world. Learn more at skoll.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. Good morning, I'm Tim Bruno. According to the New York Times, more than 40% of baby formulas are out of stock at stores around the country, a crisis that has been building for months and stems from pandemic supply issues that were exacerbated by the February closure of a major production plant. President Biden said yesterday that the administration had, quote, moved as quickly as possible, end quote, react to the problem of the national baby shortage as it became apparent. The White House said states have been asked to boost accessibility of baby formula for WIC recipients, and the Food and Drug Administration said it's looking at ways to make it easier to import baby formula. I spoke locally with Nancy McGraw, public health director at Sullivan County, but first I spoke with Jerry Hinchey, director of nutrition policy at the Food Research and Action Center in Washington. They work to improve the nutrition, health, and well-being of people struggling against poverty-related hunger in the United States. I asked her how parents are coping with this crisis.
What are some of the things that you're hearing from folks about this crisis and how they're dealing with it?
People are desperate. You know, this is a desperate situation, and it's on top of over 2 years of people just trying to cope, right? People have had it. They're just like, now this is happening on top of everything else. What am I going to do? I don't have a lot of ways to maneuver here. Like, what are the solutions? Because you got to have infant formula, right? It's not like you can put milk in the bottle. That is going to cause intestinal bleeding. So these are things that are really making people feel desperate. They're trying to think, what can I do if I can't get this formula? You know, and again, particularly in rural areas, people, your listeners, they don't have a lot of store choices. It's usually one store and you got to go a long ways to get to it. You get to it and the formula is not there. What are you going to do? So I think that people just feel like, why is this happening? I need a break here. I'm already struggling with my budget. I'm struggling to make sure a lot of things go the right way and try to get back to normal. And now this is happening. So I feel like it's good that President Biden has spoken to the infant formula manufacturers and said to them, really, you need to ramp it up. And they are doing a lot of things. They're trying to fly in formula from other countries because they manufacture these formulas in other countries as well, like fly it in from Ireland. They're trying to do all that kind of stuff. They're trying to expand the kind of formula that you can get with WIC. So if people are going to the big box stores, I think some of that formula is going to be become WIC eligible. So you should check with the WIC agency. So I think those are things. But that is what we're hearing from people. You know, the other thing that I would say about it is that so infant formula is so expensive that when we talk about people struggling with their budgets already because of inflation, food inflation, we're talking about a lot of people. Like it's not just people who are at the poverty level. We're really seeing that, you know, this is moving up into a lot of people who, you know, they have jobs, but there isn't anything about their wages that it's going to accommodate this kind of increase in formula prices and this difficulty in getting it. And if you look at people who need these special formulas, that's even more money. So this isn't something, you know, this isn't an item like some of the other things that we eat that you can switch it up or you can get a cheaper version, or, you know, this is something that really costs a lot of money and it's costing even more. And that's part of what's the problem in addition to the shortage. And that is part of what the Biden administration is saying, like, oh, come on, like, just don't do this. You need to get more formula and it shouldn't be costing this much.
Who is being impacted the most by this crisis? I know that some babies can't drink breast milk and so baby formula is a necessity. Who's being impacted the most?
I think there are two categories of people being impacted. One very broad category is people who are struggling to make ends meet as far as their budget, their food budget is concerned. So if we think about the context for this, the most recent government figures tell us that food inflation has gone up by 10.8% in the last year. That's the highest rate of food inflation in 40 years. So that's the context. So then you think, okay, families with young children, they're trying to figure out how they can get this formula. The formula is costing more because there's less of it for people to get. So that's a big tax on people's budgets and they're struggling. The other set of people are people who are on WIC. And WIC is very specific about the formulas that you can get with WIC normally. And so if there's a shortage, it's harder to maneuver if you're held into a narrow band of options. And so we did just see the Biden administration issue new guidance that urges the states to maximize flexibilities and let WIC clients choose as many different formulas as there are options, just to give them room to move. So that's good news. The other set of people who are really, really impacted by this and don't have a lot of room to maneuver at all are families of all incomes who have children with special needs. And there are a lot of families with children with special needs. So things like PKU, where the kids have to have that special formula and they need it as they're growing up. They just can't eat regular food. So that formula is crucial to the health of those children. They can't switch to other things. If they eat regular food, they'll get brain damaged. There's also a lot of different special formula uses. So for say, for example, you've got children who are 1 and 2 and 3 year olds who may have special needs. They could, their families can manage their special needs at home if they have access to these special formulas and the kids are used to having that formula and everything's good until you can't get that formula. Some of those special formulas are actually only made by Abbott. So it's really a challenge for families and they don't have a lot of room to maneuver. It's not like you could just go use some other kind of formula. You definitely can't use regular formula and they can't eat regular food. So those parents are panicked and they're just looking all over the place trying to figure out where they could find options to get those special formulas. So I think those are kind of two categories of people that I see having the least maneuverability in this situation and the highest needs. And then if you think geographically, we often see, and I'm sure your listeners see, that rural areas are kind of like last on the stop to get whatever food there is. Like there are already supply chain issues in rural areas prior to COVID, and they've just been worse during COVID. So I think that sometimes parents of young children who live in rural areas are even more strapped as far as trying to find what they need in terms of these formulas. And that's true for WIC families. That's true for just everyone, regular families and these special needs children.
you know, it doesn't look like this current shortage is going to resolve itself anytime soon. So how can parents navigate this next stretch of this shortage for baby formula?
The one thing I think that is the first really good step is for parents to speak to their pediatricians, for parents to go back and speak to their WIC nutritionists, to really consult the people who are professionals and to problem solve with them about what are next steps, because there are serious consequences to even just switching regular formulas. So that is what I think is really important there. Some like hacks, tips that some people have been trying is to order online and to get things delivered. So some people are trying that. Some people are going on Facebook to try to figure things out and, you know, work with other parents and see what they can get done. So those are kind of little practical things that I've heard people say that they're trying. But really, you want to consult your pediatrician and you want to consult your WIC nutritionist and really find out from them, you know, what they're thinking with a parent about what can happen going forward. One thing that I will say, just to be super clear, is that some people are getting so desperate that they're, you know, maybe they're watering down their formula to see if they can make it stretch longer. That's, of course, not a good idea. Some people are saying, like, oh, well, Grandma says we used to just feed evaporated milk. Baby's like it. It's sweet. Let's do that. Nope, not a good idea. Babies really need that infant formula set up the way it is because it's super digestible for them and also it's fortified. So, for example, babies really need iron, and that formula has a lot of vitamins, including that in it. So some of these things that maybe are like folk remedies or desperate actions, those are really not great ideas. Regular milk doesn't work well, and there really is no way to make formula at home. And that we've also seen a lot of that on the internet. So, like, just do not go with all this kind of advice, even if you're a parent and you're feeling desperate. Go back to your doctor, go back to WIC. And WIC is going to offer even more flexibilities. I know the New York WIC agency really is focused on this. They really want to make sure that people have as many choices as possible. And if it's not working out, then there should be more options for you. Go back and speak to them and say that you've heard that there are more options and you want more options and you need more options.
We've been speaking with Jerry Henchy, Director of Nutrition Policy at the Food Research and Action Center, national nonprofit organization working to eradicate poverty-related hunger and undernutrition in the United States. More information at frac.org. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm glad you're trying to help your listeners understand it.
And now we're joined by Nancy McGraw, Public Health Director for Sullivan County, about local response to the national baby formula shortage. Nancy, are you seeing this impacting our area? Obviously, it probably is. And what advice do you have for parents?
A little bit. We are, some of our staff are getting phone calls from clients that they serve in the communities, our Healthy Families Home Visiting program, and you know, I checked with the WIC program, which is now operated in Sullivan County by Sun River Healthcare. So, you know, they are getting calls. It's not a lot, but the state health department has also, you know, issued a press release and to let the public know that the WIC programs are keeping a close communication with the stores that sell baby formula and to make sure it's available to families who receive WIC and pay for their formula that way, because it's very expensive. But for the rest of the population who may not be eligible for WIC, and certainly the income guidelines are pretty generous. You can make over $54,000 a year for a family of four and be eligible for WIC. A lot of people don't realize that. But I would recommend that people check with their pediatrician or family physician first and foremost if they're having an issue. And don't just switch your formula without checking with your doctor. If you can't find the one that you normally use or especially if you're using a special formula for a baby with issues with regular formula, because you always want to go with what your doctor recommends and not to look at, you know, misinformation or information that might be swirling around on social media saying it's okay to prepare your own formula using Karo syrup. That is not safe, and we don't recommend that. There's a lot of nutrition and vitamins for brain development in baby formula, and so I would also recommend people check with their local food pantries to see if they have some available, and they can call us at 292-5910 at Public Health. We'll try to get them in touch with the right person to try to get them some resources if they just have run out of options.
This week, the United States marked a grim milestone, over a million deaths of folks who have died from COVID-19. President Biden ordered flags at half staff. Governor Kathy Hochul ordered flags on state buildings to fly at half staff. New York had recorded about 71,000 deaths, putting us fourth among states behind California, Texas, and Florida. What are you sort of reflecting on as we pass this terrible milestone?
It's really hard to wrap your head around a million people lost. I think, you know, even within the state, you know, that 70 plus thousand people is really kind of makes your head spin in terms of any impact on a population due to a virus, you know, or any other disaster for that matter. So it is somber to think about it. And, you know, we've all been through a lot the last couple of years. I think that we were hoping this would be over by now, but, you know, the virus is still out there. It's continuing to mutate and be transmitted. We have a lot better protection now with our vaccines, and that's what I would really, really underscore. We're very fortunate to have a protective vaccine, and I can't stress enough the importance of that protection, because it has the vast majority of people who have been hospitalized who were high risk were not vaccinated.
We're still awaiting Congress to act on more federal funding to fight the pandemic. Even the White House's new COVID response coordinators issuing a warning that there could see a jump in more cases if we don't get that. Are you hopeful that that funding will be coming, and how will it help you in your office?
Well, we always wait for opportunities for funding to flow through to the counties so that we can adequately prepare for whatever is next, whether it's to ramp up again or, you know, shift gears in some way. We definitely would, you know, welcome the opportunity for more funding. A lot of times it comes with certain restrictions, so it's not always the pot of money that we were hoping for. But we'll see.
The latest guidance from the CDC, it seems that they've designated several counties as the orange zone, according to their latest map. What does that mean, and what does it mean for our area?
Right. They have designated quite a few more counties in New York State who've gone from a medium community transmission level to a high transmission level, and they base that on how many new cases per 100,000 people in each county based on population. And the State Health Department also issued a advisory recommending mask wearing in indoor spaces because of this, and put out a press release. So there's 45 counties in New York State now that have a high COVID burden, according to the CDC's data. And we were in the medium transmission level for quite some time, and actually Orange County was in the low transmission level. So we are seeing slowly the number of people testing positive each day climb higher and higher. But the hospitalization rate is still pretty low, at least in this area, in Sullivan County. You know, we've had less than five people. It's been zero for a few weeks. So in other parts of the state where there's a more dense population, a lot more people, the hospitalization rates are starting to go up, but tends to be people who are not vaccinated, maybe higher risk for severe illness, or elderly. So the recommendations now are just precautionary, just an advisory to let people know that there's slightly higher risk, to wear a mask indoors in public, to stay up to date with your vaccines, get boosted if you haven't yet, get tested if you have symptoms, and if you are exposed to somebody or you're not feeling well, and you do test positive, to wear a mask definitely around others. We recommend that people with high risk for severe illness take additional precautions, and they need to discuss that with their healthcare provider based on their own situation.
And you mentioned that there are 45 counties in New York that are now in that high transmission rate. That includes Sullivan County, Orange County, and Ulster County. And, you know, this move up, we kind of all pay attention to this. What? How do you feel about it? What can you tell us in terms of new CDC recommendations? It seems that, like, they're in line with what we learned in February in terms of, you know, masking and vaccinations. Any particular thing driving this, or is this just sort of where this is flowing at this point?
I think it's where it's flowing at this point. The weather's nicer. People are going to events. They're out and about. People may not be wearing masks as much as they were, especially indoors, as much as they were when we were really concerned about this. So the virus is continuing to be transmitted. It's still out there. So although we now, we have vaccination, we have boosters for really good protection, it's always a good idea to wear a mask if you're in a crowded area indoors, because you are probably going to be with a lot of people from out of the area or people that you don't know, whether they're, symptomatic or not.
Outdoor activities getting underway as the weather warms up. Any concerns about outdoor gatherings?
Not at this point. Right now we just want everybody to use, the common sense that we all have. Certainly being outdoors is a lot less risky than indoors without a mask. So, if you're at a concert or you're at a community gathering, it should always be a choice for somebody based on their own personal risk and comfort level to wear a mask and to try to distance themselves from others outdoors if they're not wearing a mask.
All right, Nancy McGraw, Director of Public Health for Sullivan County, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we speak with Delaware Valley Action about the reproductive rights protest and rally in Milford today, part of a national day of protest. This is Radio Chatskill.
You know, the news doesn't have to make you angry or uselessly anxious. It doesn't have to be loud or constantly breaking. On Weekend Edition, we ask the questions you have and get answers you need, not making you spill your coffee or curdling the milk in your cereal. So please join us every weekend morning on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
On the next On Being, botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer on the intelligence of plants.
When I think about mosses, to me they are exemplars of not only surviving, but flourishing by working with natural processes. Mosses are superb teachers about living within your means.
I'm Krista Tippett. Join us.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Today, abortion rights supporters will protest in cities across the United States, kicking off what organizers said would be a, quote, summer of rage, end quote, if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns the Roe v. Wade case that legalized abortion nationwide. Planned Parenthood, Women's March, and other abortion rights groups organized more than 300 Bans Off Our Bodies marches today, including local rallies in Liberty, Honesdale, and Milford. Ed Gregert of Delaware Valley Action is an organizer of the Milford protest.
Yes, we are part of that effort nationwide. There's hundreds and hundreds of events. In Milford, there Delaware Valley Action and the Pike County Democratic Committee and the Delaware Township Democratic Club are co-sponsoring an event, a rally for reproductive rights, on Saturday, May 14th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. We will be meeting at or assembling at the Pike County Courthouse at 6 o'clock, which is on 410 Broad Street in Milford. And the registration has been online through that nationwide Facebook page, or no, website page. And the registrations as of right now have been way over 150 people signing up. And this is amazing because most of our normal, say, members here in Pike County or in Milford area just usually come to these events. And the registrations have come from not just Pennsylvania, but from New Jersey and a lot from New York State as well, based on the telephone numbers that people are signing up with.
And these rallies across the nation are in response to the publishing of a draft Supreme Court opinion in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case that would overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey. And rule that there is no constitutional right to abortion. Now, again, that's a draft opinion, although the court confirmed that the draft was authentic. The final opinion is expected to be issued before the end of the court's term at the end of June. What do you hope that these rallies will help do? Do you think they'll help sway the court's opinion?
That I can't answer. I wish I could be really positive about that. But it sends a message to a number of individuals and groups, and that includes both the Congress, the members of Congress, because as you know, they are also, one side is trying to enact a national law codifying the right to an abortion, and then also to state legislatures and state officials, because similar kinds of laws are being proposed or have been proposed or are being enacted in a number of states, similar to basically the overthrow of Roe v. Wade. And so we want to make sure that our congressional, but also our state legislative members hear from us and hear from the community that we are upset, we're going to oppose this, and it won't just stop with whatever ruling comes in June from the Supreme Court. Actions will continue.
What was your reaction when you saw or heard about this leaked opinion, draft opinion?
Well, I guess I can't say I'm surprised. I was surprised because obviously there have been soundings like this coming out of, and then obviously with the packing of the Supreme Court by fairly right-wing justices, it's something that's been discussed for the last year or so. And so, but to read the language of that draft and the sources that Alito has called upon to justify that particular position in his draft was pretty shocking.
In New York, the state government, state officials have looked to make the state a safe haven for reproductive rights. You're just across the river in Pennsylvania. Can you tell us what's going on in Pennsylvania?
We have looked across the river and admired what the state of New York is talking about doing. It is not the same here in Pennsylvania. Both houses of the Pennsylvania legislature, the Assembly and the Senate, are controlled by Republicans. And over recent years, what has kept abortion legal in Pennsylvania has been the veto by the governor, whose term is up this year. And so we will be electing a new governor in November. And so we'll be, of course, electing state senators and assemblymen. And so if we don't flip the House and the Senate in the state of Pennsylvania, and if we lose the governorship, then it will clearly be illegal in Pennsylvania, if just like the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And so we want to flip the legislation. We want to make sure that the governor, the Democratic governor, is elected so that we can pass perhaps a law. May not be as positive as that in New York, but hopefully we can pass a law that will guarantee the right here in Pennsylvania as well. Making it a safe haven, I'm not so optimistic about that, but hopefully we can flip it and get a law that is in fact representative of women's rights.
Do you fear that Roe v. Wade being overturned will impact other rights?
Well, I mean, one can only speculate, but based on the reasoning of Alito, practices that were not customary in at the time of the Constitution frame could well be in jeopardy as well. And that obviously is a loving case in terms of interracial marriages, has to do with same-sex marriages. The laws, the progressive laws, and that have been enacted over the last, loving is many years ago, decades ago, could in fact be in jeopardy as well. Because if they use that logic, that argument that Alito has used, they could easily examine all the laws that affect privacy. They could change all those, I mean, reverse all those, because they didn't exist, in quotes, at the time of the Constitution.
Again, we'll remind folks that Delaware Valley Action is hosting a rally for reproductive rights at the Pike County Courthouse starting at 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. tonight. Speakers will include clergy, elected officials, community members, and a Delaware Valley high school student. Ed, if folks want to get more information, where could they go?
They can actually go to the Planned Parenthood National site for rallies. They can also go to Delaware Valley Action Facebook page. They could write us at DelawareValleyAction@gmail.com, and we'll get them. We'll get all the information to them, as well as signing up for our weekly kind of alert newsletter to be kept in the loop on as what's happening, both here in Pike County, but across the tri-state area, in terms of the issues that are facing all of us as citizens.
Ed Gregert from Delaware Valley Action, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back with a walk through the Labyrinth Gardens. It's a Farm and Country Extra. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hello, my name is John Gordon, and I host a music show right here on WJFF called Ramble Tamble. It airs every Thursday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. I love music, and I play all kinds of different music. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursday night, 7 to 9, right here on WJFF.
Hi, I'm Donna Fellenberg, and on Catskill Character this week, joining me is painter Jay Brooks from Calicoon, New York. Jay just retired from teaching art at Monticello High School, but he still has plenty to teach us all about plein air painting, playing various instruments, and the value of the arts in education. So we're going to be talking all about that Saturday at 11:30 on Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Emmy Blotnick had a suggestion to improve working conditions here at NPR.
What if HR gave us mistresses?
I'm Peter Sagal. We provide you with all kinds of benefits in a friendly way on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And on Saturdays, as usual, Farm and Country follows Radio Chatskill. And we know you can't wait, and today you won't have to. So we have a special treat. It's a Farm and Country Extra, thanks to Rosie Starr. She's going to take us on a walk through the Labyrinth Gardens in Greentown, Pennsylvania.
For WJFF Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr in Greentown, Pennsylvania. I believe that's Pike County. It's a lovely spring day. My husband and I treated ourselves to a spontaneous date. We saw a posting on the UD network, for a labyrinth, and I was so curious. We called and talked to someone on the phone, a very friendly person, and here we are in this idyllic site. Carol, she's going to introduce herself, and we'll talk a little bit about this very special place here out in the countryside. So tell me your name.
My name is Carol Cannon Nesko, and I created this labyrinth garden here. It's open to the public.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
I specialize in architectural renderings, interiors and exteriors, but I've done all kinds of different paintings and stuff on commission, too. I've restored carousel horses.
I'm not sure I know what an architectural rendering is.
I draw buildings from blueprints, and usually they're before they're built, interior and exterior. And they use them for presentations at their board meetings or to sell the products. I've worked for big communities out in Whitehaven, a retirement community. We're added to a dining room lounge, a game room, a fitness room, a library, kind of interior drawings. Lake Wyoming did a big addition, and I did another series of drawings like that for them, too.
Oh, I understand. It's a visual representation of what the client is to expect.
Right. It's all done by hand. Nothing was computerized then.
So it's really a work of art.
Yes, and well, I still work that way.
I can see that. I mean, we're sitting here by a water feature. It's called a little pond. It's quite idyllic. And what I love about approaching your property is your dandelions, your grass is filled with them. And I know in the spring, the bees love dandelions. And to approach the labyrinth, you walk through the field of dandelions. It's very special. Now, yeah, let's talk about this property here, where you are, and the beginnings of how this labyrinth came about.
We're here in Greentown. We have pretty large property. We're on 12 acres, but I sectioned an area in the front to build the labyrinth. And it took me 5 years to build, and that was just the path. In the past 5 years, now open to the public and working and adding to the gardens. It looks different each season you come. The flowers could get to 4 feet high. I do all I can to keep the paths clear. My event this Saturday, May 14th, is World Labyrinth Day because we postponed last week because of the rain. And then I do have another event in July, a secret garden tour, July 23rd. And on event days, you don't need an appointment because I'm open all day from 8 in the morning till 8 at night. So on those hot days, if you want to come early in the morning or late in the evening, are perfect to walk the labyrinth.
Okay, for folks that maybe are not aware of what a labyrinth is, explain to us what it is.
A meditating walking path. It could help you in prayer, meditation, celebrating, to dream, to play. It's what you make of it. There's no wrong way to walk it.
Well, do you know anything about the history of labyrinth and the shape? Are they always in the same shape?
No, there's many different shapes, like a heart shape, there's a hand shape, there's a turtle shape. The traditional labyrinth, and my labyrinth is a medieval shape. They call it medieval or cathedral.
And because it goes in a circle. When my husband and I were walking, we went in circles.
Well, it's just doesn't go around and round. The walk is like, I think you take 4 steps forward and feels like you're taking 2 steps back the way to get you to the center. But the path doesn't cross itself. It's all one continuous path.
Mm-hmm. As this person that constructed this labyrinth, tell us how you went about building it.
I originally painted it on the ground and then decided I wanted to make it permanent. I started at the top of the hill. You could see it slightly on a hill. And brought my rocks in and laid them where they would be. So this way I could drive the tractor in. The first year, 3 half rows done in 1 year. And that's everything with, I put weed guard under it and the wood chips, the rocks to hold the weed guard down and wood chips in. And of course I make it double work because the path has double-sided for the gardens for rocks. So I have twice as many rocks as I really need it, but I needed them to hold the wood chips and to separate the gardens. And
the rocks are very beautiful. They're very typical of Pennsylvania. I mean, if you're a gardener, you know them as Pennsylvania potatoes because you put your shovel down in the earth and you hit one of these. So they're all that size, like small watermelon size rocks, maybe bluestone in character.
Yes, actually, in the quarry that I got went, I particularly picked a lot of the blue ones.
And they're beautiful. There's moss growing on them, lichen, and the way they're placed, they're absolutely beautiful. Let's talk a little bit about the species of plants that you have there.
I have plants that come up by themselves each year in different seasons of the year. I plant some seeds that will be popping up, and I keep one row that I plant annuals in, which I didn't get in yet because the season was too early yet. But I have over right now 75 different varieties of flowers in the garden right now, and it's spreading.
I do recognize some of them. There's forget-me-nots.
Yes, forget-me-nots. Let's see what's blooming right now. Daffodils. The grape hyacinths, I have some sweet williams, impatiens, and I planted some impatiens there. I have wild pansies, those little wild pansies that are coming up, have them in blue and white, besides the dandelions.
There's some dianthus, I think, in there. They look like small, tiny carnations.
I have these little sticky pink flowers that will be coming up. I love them. I got one clipping from my husband's aunt. And, I mean, 1 year I had it going all the way around the row. And then last year it was spreading everywhere where I had to, like, had to tame it back. But I hope I didn't lose too much this year. But I always, you know, try to keep them going.
Yeah, your ground covers are very nice.
Yeah, they're just starting to bloom. I love one jugula. I have a row of that going around the outside. Everyone thought it was lavender. I had so much purple there. So.
The phlox were quite impressive.
Well, they're just starting. They're not flowering yet, but I tried just planting a big batch over in there to try to get them to come back. I had them earlier, but they seemed to, you know, scattered, and then they weren't in one spot. So I like them when they're in a cluster because it makes it more colorful.
I do have minimal experience walking a labyrinth. The first time was at a Grange Hall in Wayne County in Pennsylvania, and I walked it in a meditative style. Today, I was more playful. I was with my husband, and I did a different type of meditation, just to be mindful of my steps, the rocks, the flowers in bloom, the breeze. And I walked at a much faster pace. And it was just so much fun getting to the center. I felt like I was on an altar ready to get married again.
Each petal does have a meaning, like faith, serenity, prosperity, forgiveness. And the center is love. That's why I don't put anything in the center, so people could stand and meditate in each area where they want to be.
Well, and I also noticed a couple of my favorite things are chairs or benches, and you have them maybe for your own personal use, but do you go out there at different times of the day, like maybe in the mist in the morning or at sunset to observe how the light is on the labyrinth?
Yes, I've been in the labyrinth in all different hours. It could have shade, it could have sun. It's still very magical.
And my husband pointed out the little moat that goes around to the side is for drainage.
Thank you to my husband. And it took us a couple years to finally get it together because every time it rained, I was getting washed out. One year, I got washed out 8 times. Okay, one rain was 11 inches. And I'm still trying to recover and repair from that one. But last year, I got washed out 5 times. The outer row, I just redid the whole thing, the weed guard and chips, and it washed out, made some big ruts. I had to level that out. And the outer edges have the biggest rocks on them. But I had to repair that row, and I'm so glad I got that done before my event. And have a couple other rows to repair is why they're not quite done yet.
It'll always be a work in progress.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Something so natural.
I just do what I can a little each year to help maintain it, to keep it in shape. I like it to look like it's groomed. It gets away from me by the end of the year, and I'm just praying for the frost by then.
Now, tell me, I felt like a kid in this labyrinth. What age group comes here? What would you like to see as an audience coming?
Anybody, everybody. I want people to know it's here. I did just have the biggest group at one time was 30 people. It was about 17 adults and 15 kids. It was all moms who homeschooled, and they got a group together and came for a couple hours. And that was the biggest group at one time, but I'm hoping to even get bigger than that.
Do you think that there's an age that's too young?
No, there was somebody just here. I don't know if the child was 2 or 3, but, you know, they just walked it. She said she walked a labyrinth before with her daughter, and her daughter, I believe, did the whole thing, too. I'm sure the labyrinth wasn't as big as this one, the one she walked before.
Is the labyrinth available for someone with a walker?
Yes. I mean, it is wide enough, and people ask me if it's handicap accessible. I mean, the path is wide enough, but it's a hill. You know, I don't think a wheelchair would ride through, you know, the wood chips very easily. I mean, it would be a struggle to push somebody around the whole thing. You may be able to get them up to the center and they could sit there. Or they could just bring them out to the bench area and just have them sit and watch you walk around. I have a mobility scooter, and that won't make it up and around it, so I know.
But an abled person with a cane or a walker could probably.
I've worked on it with 2 bad hips, but they're much better now. I had total hip replacement, so I still was out there every day.
And before we close, is there anything else you'd like to add about the labyrinth?
Well, we didn't talk about the charity that I am partnering with. It's Angels and Dragons Children Charity, Inc., and they're here at my event this weekend. If you could bring a donation of toiletries for their bags of love, they help children in foster homes, just children in the community who are in need. They work with other charities to get them what they need. We're trying to get the word out that the Angels and Dragonfly charity is here. And
what time will that event happen?
The labyrinth is open every day from 8 to 8, but the vendors will be here from 10 to 5.
Okay, and if folks want information about this?
I'm on Facebook, Labyrinth Garden in Greentown, PA, or I have a webpage, labyrinthgardenpa.com. All the information's there.
Thank you so much for your hospitality. You were so sweet to have my husband and I show up spontaneously. It's such a joy to be here. It's a gift to experience this. Thank you so much for sharing and allowing seniors like us the gift of childhood.
Thank you so much for coming, really.
It was a pleasure to meet you. For Radio Catskill, it's Rosie Starr in Pike County. Greentown, Pennsylvania, at the Labyrinth.
And the regular edition of Farm and Country is coming up next. The Farm and Country team has a lot of features, including Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report on the lunar eclipse tomorrow. At 11:30, Donna Fellenberg's Catskill character is artist Jay Brooks. And at noon, it's the Janice Adams Show. Here's a preview.
This week, part two of the Sister Days Mother-Daughter Sisterfest, a celebration of women and our lives, with my guests Dakota Nelson, a recent college grad and digital media marketing specialist, Deborah Payton-Jones, founder of Voter Education 365, Elle Cole, mompreneur, author, and advocate for children with sickle cell anemia, Marianne Howland, founder and CEO of Ibis Communications, author of Warrior Rising. Irma McLaurin, former president of Shaw University and founder of the Irma McLaurin Black Feminist Archive. A planned discussion quickly morphed into more of a late-night heart-to-heart with everyone huddled on one big bed. From that came a moving calling of the ancestral roll, the names of mothers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, great-great-grandmothers even, across centuries, women whose lives and legacies had brought us together. From there, our no-holds-barred conversation led us over mountains, through valleys, and somehow to the subject of hair. Hair.
That's the Janice Adams Show coming up at noon. More local talk with Staying Home with Josh Fox at 1, and in local music, it's Jambalaya at 2, and Now and Then with Kathy Geary at 3. And remember, you can listen local wherever you are, on air at 90.5 FM, online at wjffradio.org. Download the WJFF app and listen on your smartphone, or if you have a smart speaker, ask it to play WJFF Radio Catskill. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. Remember to follow us on social media at WJFF Radio is our handle on Facebook and Instagram, and on Twitter at Radio Catskill. Have a good weekend.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Marketplace on Main Street, home to Woolworth Yarn, the Calicoon Pantry, Lit Home and Book, Early Bird Cookery, The Herbal Scoop, Channery Hill Farm, Vintage Maroc, and Grizzly Bagels. From Sullivan Renaissance, a community beautification initiative of the Gary Foundation, dedicated to empowering volunteers to build beautiful, active communities in Sullivan County for over 20 years. On Facebook, Instagram, and at sullivanrenaissance.org.
The annual Folk Alliance Conference is the biggest national event in American folk music, and artists from Britain and Ireland across the Atlantic to play there, if they're invited. Next time on The Wackaload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing some of the British and Irish guests at this year's conference. Join me, please, Sunday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, the forecast mostly cloudy, isolated thunderstorms developing this afternoon with a high near 76. Showers and thunderstorms this evening, then cloudy with rain likely overnight, a low near 60. And more rain showers in the morning with numerous thunderstorms developing in the afternoon, according to the National Weather Service, and high of 77. Rain continues again on Monday.
This is WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.